Water. Earth. Fire. Air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased, in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series, Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a month had passed, and my cousin and I discovered that Avatar, a show about an airbender named Aang, would start streaming on Netflix in a few weeks. And although our podcasting skills are great, we had a lot of episodes to watch before we were ready to podcast for anyone. But we believe Aang saved us from the chaos of our world. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Hi everyone, today we are continuing our journey through Avatar, The Last Airbender. I'm Andrea, Paul and I are cousins who love fantasy and sci-fi and talk about it endlessly.
And in this episode, we continue through Book 2. Avatar Aang has met his earthbending master, and Zuko is on his own traveling through the Earth Kingdom without Uncle Iroh, his mentor.
If you've been listening to our previous Atla episodes, you know that each episode we discuss several chapters of the series and provide our reflections on the themes and share what we've learned. This week, we're discussing episodes 7 through 10, so if you haven't watched through episode 10 yet, go back, watch, and come back when you finish.
You know, Andrea, sharing tea with an interesting stranger is one of life's great pleasures. And this podcast, you know, we're spilling all the tea with adult content. That's just what it is. And, you know, if you're not into stories about splashing around in the water with your boo until you feel better about life, then you may want to check out a different podcast.
So the first episode we're covering this week is episode 7, Zuko Alone. As the episode title states, Zuko is traveling through the Earth Kingdom by himself. It's pretty sad.
Yeah.
It isn't.
He brought it on himself, though. He did bring it on himself. He did peace out one of the best traveling companions you could possibly have, the life of the party.
Seriously. It is an easy trip. He's starving, and he sees a young couple roasting meat. He's tempted to steal, you know, going back to his blue spirit ways.
Where he at?
But he notes that the woman is pregnant, and he opts not to steal anything from them.
Good on him.
As he makes his way through the terrain, he's becoming a little bit delirious, and he sees a vision of his mother. He arrives at a village and attempts to buy some food.
But not before the locals are out here, you know, like our girl Siri from The Witcher, hitting that 7-Eleven in the CeeLo game. They are not played around, you know, like, and they punch the dude after he hits his point. I was like, golly, man, you can't even win in this town. It's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, CeeLo is a universal game, apparently. So
every story everywhere is just the beginning of time. Rolling dice. Let's go. What they hitting for? Let's go. Anyway.
So Zuko attempts to buy some food, but he only has enough to buy 2 bags of feed for the ostrich horse that he stole.
Yeah, you could tell he was a prince and didn't manage money. He has 2 little puny coins, and he's like, I would like some food, a place to stay, some ostrich egg. Dude, you got 2 coins. What the fuck is wrong with you? It's not happening.
It's pretty bad. Like, he's clearly has never had to, like, fend for himself.
No.
So a young boy throws some eggs at the group of soldiers who are playing CeeLo. Zuko refuses to snitch on them, and the soldiers take his feed. The boy then offers to take Zuko home to repay him.
It's the least he could do. He could have given him the fucking egg he threw, okay? Like, that would have been nice. Like, the guys, you hear, he's sitting right there, and he hears him saying how hungry he is and not having enough money, and he says, I have this egg in my hand, let me throw it. I would have...
So oh, I can God. See that you're out on Lee, which is the name of the little boy.
I like Lee, actually. I just think that was a poor choice in that moment. It's like, oh, here's the hunk. He's like, he had to double back around and, like, do something to make up for it, because there was no excuse for hearing that guy starving and be like, I'm going to throw this food I have in my hand. Not a good look.
Well, when we get to Lee's farm, we see that they actually have a lot, right? They have animals and food. Lee's parents offer Zuko a place to work and stay for the night and a hot meal.
Yeah. And he also, like Siri, is annoying AF. Tons of fucking questions. Tons. Yeah. So many questions.
Yeah, he's definitely enough of the questions. Like, to the point where his own father is like, bro.
like, can you stop? Can you stop asking him all these questions?
You're embarrassing me. Zuko continues to think about his mother. And we get a glimpse of the cutest creature in this adorable whole story.
Adorable.
Turtle ducks.
Yeah. How could you combine two more adorable creatures? Like, it's amazing. It's, turtles and ducks.
They're just adorable. So in this flashback, we see that Ty Lee, Mei, and Azula are kids too. And Azula puts Mei in danger during a game, and Zuko tries to rescue her. And in the end, he ends up getting them both soaked in the fountain.
But saving her from being burnt. So, good on Zuko.
Yeah, small price to pay, because Azula is definitely a sociopath and was going to let her friend get burned.
Yeah.
Their games are interrupted by their mother, who brings a missive from Uncle Iroh, talking about the siege of Ba Sing Se. He sends two gifts as well. A dagger for Zuko, which is inscribed, "Never give up without a fight," and a doll for Azula.
Of which she burns. Of which she lights up.
Okay, a couple things about this doll. Like, Iroh is a very observant person. I feel like this was shade. He knows Azula doesn't want a doll.
Definitely shade. Definitely. He's like, oh, wearing the latest fashions in Boston. He's like, yeah, he knew. He fucking knew she didn't want a doll.
Yeah.
But that doesn't take away that she's batshit crazy. Like, oh my God. Like, why does she light it up? She's crazy. Even her mom looks mortified.
Yeah, her mother is like, oh, wow. Okay. So back in present day, Zuko finds Lee playing with his swords and teaches him how to use them.
I love this part.
Yeah.
I really do.
This is a good part. It's really great. He talks about, you know, each sword is they're two halves of a single weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Lee tells Zuko about his brother, Sensu, and who is in the military fighting against the Fire Nation. And in the morning, Zuko readies himself to head off when the soldiers, the same terrible soldiers, arrive with news that Sensu's battalion was captured.
And they're jeering a little bit. They're kind of like fucking with the family a little bit. Like, you know what they do to these guys when they get captured. And just like, kind of, not good dudes. Not good dudes at all. Like, it's, you know, they talk about all the ways that he may be getting tortured, which is terrible.
Yeah, there's no kindness at all in their message. They didn't come because they're concerned. They came kind of as a way to hold this over the family.
Mm-hmm.
So Zuko has another memory of his mother. In this memory, he learns that his cousin Luten, who is Iroh's son, has died in battle. Lee's father says that he will go to the front to find Sensu. And as he leaves, Zuko gives Lee the dagger that Iroh gave him.
Mm-hmm.
Back in his memories, Azula cruelly tells Zuko that Iroh is returning after losing. The loss of his son prevented him from being able to carry on. And this is essentially, you know, how Iroh lost the siege of Ba Sing Se.
Yeah, and she goes as far as if he was a real general, he would fight on in his honor instead of coming home crying. And she's like, I mean, you're really starting to see Azula's character, right? Like, we already knew, but now you're starting to see why Iroh and Zuko chose the Earth Nation rather than getting captured by Azula, right? So
it's kind of terrifying how, as a little girl, even she's like essentially a villain. After Iroh is set to return home, the family has an audience with their grandfather, Fire Lord Azulon. And Azula is clearly a favorite here. She displays her bending capacity and he cheers her on. And then Zuko tries to show what he can do and he fails. He's not a prodigy like his sister. His mother tells him that she loves him because he's a fighter. And then Ozai and Azulon have a private audience together. Ozai tries to convince Azulon to pass over Iroh, essentially using the fact that Luten has died to say, well, he doesn't have an heir, so you should just make me the Fire Lord. Ozai says this pretty boldly, and Azulon is not okay. No. Like, how dare you? Like, you want me to pass over my firstborn son? And tells him that he must be punished. Azula, mm-hmm. who stayed behind to eavesdrop because, you know, she's nosy, tells Zuko that the punishment is that Ozai must kill his firstborn son as well.
And says it with glee, Daddy's gonna kill you.
She is like such a one-dimensional villain at this point. She's just like the most evil thing Azula will always say it.
Yeah, no, 100%. And before they're going into the audience, she's all like going in about how the grandfather's going to die soon anyway. And the mother's like, what is wrong with that child? Like, the mother is mortified. Clearly, there's favorites in that family. Yeah. The father loves Azula. Mother loves Zuko. And they're split down the middle.
Because they value different things. Zuko's father values only power and strength. And his mother values heart. So it's clear who takes after whom. Mm-hmm. So back in present day, Lee's mother catches up to Zuko and explains that Lee was captured by the soldiers. Zuko promises to help, and he fights the soldiers to free Lee, very bravely, in fact. Zuko dispatches with most of them easily, but when he comes up against the last one, he's knocked down, and he recalls the night that his mother left. She tells him never to forget who he is, and then she basically walks out of his life forever. Zuko has to use firebending to fight the final soldier, which also reveals his identity. Everyone immediately turns on him, right? I mean, it's actually a pretty sad scene because he essentially says, I am, you know, Prince Zuko of the Fire Nation, and immediately the entire village is like, boo, get out.
I've heard of you. He's lying. He's not the heir. He's an outcast. Oh my gosh, dude. Not only is he saving you, he's fucking getting rid of these soldiers who've been oppressing you, and you're going to talk about his status in his own kingdom. Really, dude? Fuck out of here. Anyway, I'm out on Lee at this point. Now I can officially be out on Lee and the rest of the crew.
I don't really have an issue with Lee because of, you know, Zuko has... Listen, his brother just got caught by the Fire Nation. Like, I get it. So, in his memory, Zuko recalls that Azula notified him, you know, the next day that his grandfather had passed away. She also is playing with his dagger, which I was just like, this is creepy as hell. And that nobody knows where his mother is. Ozai becomes the Fire Lord instead of Iroh, and that's basically where the episode ends.
Usurper Ozai is. Anyway, see if Khaleesi can get him to bend the knee. Oh man, yeah, very cool episode. So in the next episode where that ends, we go to episode 8, The Chase, and Team Avatar is making camp. They're trying to, you know, settle in for the night. And Toph notes that the grass is soft. She's feeling it underneath her toes. And she's like, wait, this is really nice. But it's really just Appa's fur, right? He's shedding because it's spring. And, you know, Katara's like, I'm so glad that there's another girl here because you guys are idiots as they start making mustaches and beards and hats. But Toph has a different idea. She wants to show off those pits. She wants to show off those furry armpits. I love it. I love Toph. She goes in with the boys and she's not trying to hear what Katara's talking about. So that night, Katara approaches Toph and she tries to explain how they split up responsibilities, but Toph isn't interested in hearing what she has to say. She takes care of herself. She carries her own weight. She doesn't need anybody's help and she doesn't help anybody else out. What's the problem here, right? So Toph, at that moment, hears something. She hears a sound that sounds like an avalanche, and it's coming towards them. They know that something's coming, so they jump on the back of Appa to leave. Behind them is a huge machine.
This thing is quite large.
Yeah, it's like steamboat style. You see like the steam coming up. It's crazy. Yeah. So they land again, and they feel like they've gotten away from it. And Katara and Toph argue about responsibilities. Katara is hella passive aggressive with the shade of like, well, yeah, if Toph would have, we would have been able to get sleep if Toph wasn't doing this. And Toph, so, I mean, they're kind of getting into it. And okay. She slams the door in her face.
But Katara is right.
Like, yeah, she is.
Toph didn't even attempt to help. She's just kind of like, I got my stuff done. You guys figure out your own stuff, carry your own weight. And I'm kind of like, okay, but you wouldn't even be here if they didn't bring you.
Classic only child stuff? No, not really. I mean, not really, because, yeah, no, I don't know. I think you're right. I think Toph
is just trying to prove something here, but it's this whole back and forth between her and Katara is really frustrating, because it's like, this is a group project, and Toph is not doing her part of it.
Rugged individualism. That is Toph. That's all I got to say. So at that point, everyone's a bit sleep deprived. They're trying to get some sleep and settle in. But again, Toph hears the machine. After slamming the door in Katara's face for some privacy, she comes out really quickly. Oh my God, this thing is tailing us again. So they take off again. They're on the run. So now they land once again and wonder who it could be that's following them. Maybe it's Zuko, Katara says. She thinks a lot about Zuko. Wonder what's up with that. But the machine is there again. It's not Zuko. It's Azula, Mei, and Ty Lee. Toph's dig at Sokka is pretty funny, although not really cool. She's like, oh yeah, we could take them. It's 3-on-3. And he's like, hey, I'm here. And she's like,
but you can't do anything.
Savage. Oh my gosh. Savage. So after they throw some things at him, they realize that the machines are still coming. Azula, Mei, and Ty Lee are just, they're coming head on. So Toph stalls them with some earthbending, and they get back on Appa and fly away again. They're beginning to lose it and unravel a little bit. They're all exhausted, and it's just tough to like not have gotten any sleep and be running in the middle of the night, and Appa has to not get any sleep either. So we go back to Zuko, who appears, and he appears to be tracking Ty Lee, Mei, and Azula, right? He's following the tracks of this machine. So Zuko is actually in the shadows, but not, I don't know whether he's chasing them or really just chasing Azula a little bit. So Appa is starting to get tired. He's sleep deprived. He falls asleep. And at that point, Team Avatar is crashing full force, heading towards the ground. Katara throws some more shade at Toph once Appa wakes up and crash lands, blaming her for not helping out. Toph turns the blame on Appa and says that Appa's shedding, which is how they keep being able to find them. Aang can't take it. He blows up. Nobody's going to talk about Appa and Aang stand by for it. And he basically tells her that it's her fault and that, you know, Appa's been carrying them around. And that basically, like, she should be happy that Appa's doing that. And Toph is frustrated, hilariously earthbend Sokka out of the way and chunks the deuces. She's out.
Well, isn't Sokka, like, trying to make the peace? And she can't even hear, like, when someone's like, okay, everybody calm down. Everyone's losing their shit. Understandably, they're very tired. But,
very
like,
tired.
When Aang is mad at you, you know you've crossed the boundary.
Yeah. I mean, but, and I'm going to go on the other side, because I'm with you on Toph at this moment, but I also think, like, she has never had to experience, first of all, she's never had acceptance like this, where people are just accepting that, hey, we're not looking at you being blind or not being blind or whatever it is. You're part of this group. You're going to pull your own weight. She's saying she pulls her own weight, but really what that's code for is I feel guarded because people don't treat me like they should, so I got to prove that I'm something more than I am. So I think that we'll hit on that more, but I think, like, yeah, she's being a little bit of a brat.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why Toph is behaving this way, but I also understand why Katara is behaving this way. Katara did try very nicely to say, okay, like, this is how we do things, and Toph shut her down immediately. So it wasn't like Katara out the gate was like, you need to help, you got to do it. She was like, this is how we usually do things, like, we help each other. And Toph was like, yeah, but I'm helping myself, like, I don't need your help.
She also hit her with the, I'm sorry, you know, like, I'm a little bit tired and everyone's, you know, like, tired and stuff. And she's like, yeah, you are a bit tired.
Yeah. No, it's...
I'm sorry. Toph is a mess.
Katara definitely could have handled this better, but Toph is wrong. So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. She's still integrating into the group. So at this point, Toph is out of the camp. She's gone. And now Katara and Aang start feeling terrible. You know, because Aang realizes, oh my gosh, what did I do? I may have just lost my earthbending master, and I haven't even started learning earthbending yet. And they decide they need to find Toph and apologize. Meanwhile, they clean Appa because Aang realizes that Toph also had a point, right? That Appa is shedding. And they decide to make a fake trail to lead Azula and crew off of course. On her own, Toph comes across Iroh. Just, you know, earth bends into the back of a boulder and, oh, my tailbone, you know, right in the back. Pretty funny little interaction. And Azula and her girl squad look at this trail that basically Aang has made with Appa's fur, and they're not convinced. They're not convinced. They realize that the Avatar is trying to pull a fast one, and so Ty Lee and Mei head in one direction, and Azula follows the fur in another direction. Meanwhile, Appa isn't doing so well. He's kind of still falling asleep, and Mei and Ty Lee are on their trail, and they're trying to get Appa to not quite fall asleep before they can get over the river, and luckily he stays awake just long enough to crash land near a river. Ty Lee and Mei show up almost immediately, and Katara and Sokka basically have to fight them. They're not doing so well, right? And they're eventually rescued by Appa as Sokka hilariously falls in front of Katara because, you know, Ty Lee has done the thing, the chi blocking thing, where she like gets you where you can't bend or do anything. But I mean, Sokka wasn't bending anyway, so it's all good. It doesn't matter. But he can't move. He's paralyzed. Now, Mei notes, along with Ty Lee, Sokka's kind of cute.
Yeah, he's not bad looking. I mean, listen, they're still teenage girls.
Yeah.
He's kind of cute. They don't have a lot of interaction with the outside world aside from Azula and the soldiers. You know, when they meet a new guy, they're going to take note.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. So then Azula catches up to Aang in what's kind of like an old Western scene, which is pretty cool. It's like a showdown at high noon. I loved it. So she shows up there and they're in this abandoned village, and Aang says he's not running. He agrees to fight her. Iroh and Toph share some tea. Iroh explains to her that it's okay to let people who love you care about you, to care for you. He also tells her that he's been tracking his nephew, and that basically, if he needs me, I'll be there. She asks if he's lost, if his nephew's lost, and he says, in a way, he's still trying to find himself. And, you know, it's pretty interesting because Toph gets up and thanks him, and he thinks that she's thanking him for the tea. But in actuality, she's thanking him for the wisdom that he's given her, and she realizes that she needs to go back and rejoin Team Avatar based on what he said about letting her guard down and letting people care for her. Just as Aang and Azula are about to face off back in the town, Zuko shows up and puts himself between Aang and Azula.
Not because he is nice, but because he wants to capture Aang himself.
I need to get the Avatar to restore my honor. Azula with the shade in the beginning. Don't you see the family resemblance?
Honor.
It's okay. You can laugh. It's funny. Oh, God.
She's too much.
A mess. So, basically, Aang and Zuko fight Azula together. They're teaming up to get at Azula. Zuko struggles the most in this fight, but it just seems like Azula has everything going for her. She's got Aang on the ropes or underneath a lot of rubble. And at that moment, Katara and Sokka show up. And Katara, like, you know, water whips Azula, gets her off of Aang. And now Azula's after Katara. I just wanted to stop, just pause for a second, that instead of Aang just being happy that his life was saved, he's like, Katara! He's so, I mean, dude, just, you got it bad. You got it bad when you're about to die. You know, it's like hilarious. It's too much. He's sprung, man.
Yeah.
I gotta say. And it's like really funny. Anyway, as you keep going, Iroh and Toph arrive to the scene as well. Toph triumphantly makes her entrance by earthbending right as Azula was about to get Sokka and Katara. And Team Avatar and Team Zuko are united in their fight against Azula.
Because she's trash. Everybody hates you, Azula. Everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, you know, she's backing up. She's calling her brother and her uncle traitors and enemies. Enemies and traitors united. I can't fight you all. I give up. A princess knows when to give up with honor. And at that point, she decides that means to shoot lightning at her uncle? Weird. Weird choice at that point. But then you see Iroh fall to the ground. Zuko is distraught. Katara and Azula has escaped. Katara, Aang, Toph, Sokka, they all are just as mortified at what just happened to Iroh. And Katara offers to help, but Zuko refuses, screaming out, leave, and firebending them away. They leave, and Team Avatar goes away as Iroh lays there on the ground, unconscious. And that's how our episode ends.
This brings us to episode 9, Bitter Work. Aang starts his earthbending lessons with Toph. He's ready to go, waking up Sokka.
Sokka? Poor Sokka, man.
Yeah, Sokka just doesn't catch any breaks. But Toph wants him to start out slow. She explains that, you know, the key to earthbending is his stance.
Mm-hmm.
We're treated to some more flashbacks of Iroh playing with Lu Ten.
An adorable flashback. It is adorable to see young Iroh and his little son and them in a field. It's just, it's the your warms the heart.
Rest in warms peace, Lu Ten. Rest in peace. He wakes up to see Zuko, who is giving him a cup of poorly made tea.
It's bracing.
Zuko notes that he's probably going to see his sister again and that he needs to learn some advanced firebending to face off with her.
And I know what you're going to say, Uncle. You're going to say that she's my sister and I shouldn't want to have to kill her or fight her.
She's crazy and she needs to go. Like one of Iroh's best lines of the entire series. I love it so much. No, great. She's crazy and she needs to go.
Go down. She's done. Oh God, it's so good. It's the best.
So he agrees to resume Zuko's training. Aang is not doing well in his earthbending lessons. Katara tries to give Toph some tips, you know, a little, you know, observation and feedback, saying that Aang needs positive feedback. And Toph is like, oh, okay, thanks, Katara. No.
Get out of here with that water stuff. You know what I mean? This is earthbending time. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, she's pretty tough. And Aang does make some small advances under her tutelage. Meanwhile, Sokka's out there trying to hunt. Because, you know, my man's head is always in his stomach.
Always.
He's worried about feeding them. He finds the cutest creature and he's like, you're very cute, but you're gonna have to be eaten.
Something about boiling rocks just brings out, you know, the scavenger. like you're like, yo, I may have to eat rocks again. I'm gonna get this thing.
So he gets stuck in some rock while he's trying to hunt. Zuko's also learning. He's learning to advance that he must have peace of mind. Iroh explains to him that only a select few firebenders can separate the positive and negative energy, the yin and the yang, and that the energy wants to come together to restore balance. Mm. In the moment when the energy comes together, the firebender must guide it, creating lightning. Back in earthbending school, Toph wants Aang to keep his stance while she sends a boulder his way and also blindfolds him after Katara tries to intervene.
Yo, he's just like, he was tight. He was like, thanks, Katara.
Yeah, appreciate it. She's not helping him out here.
No, not at all.
Like Aang, Zuko does not seem to be getting his lessons. Iroh explains to him that he cannot master using lightning because he hasn't dealt with the shame and the inner turmoil he feels.
And he mentioned something that I thought was a really strong point. Pride is not the opposite of shame, but its source. That humility is the antidote to the shame that he's feeling. That ability to be able to not, you know, take things so heavy or so serious, to be able to find that, you know, we're not that great in the face of these elements. And I found it fascinating that Aang and Zuko, again, are having these really parallel experiences on different sides of the spectrum on the different elements, you know, like dealing with earth, dealing with fire, and trying to learn how to navigate these elements. I thought it was really fascinating to see that that's what was happening for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So he promises to teach him a move that not even Azula knows, because Iroh created it himself. He teaches Zuko about all of the elements. Fire is the element of power. Earth is the element of substance. Air is the element of freedom. Water is the element of change. He explains to Zuko that he can learn from all of the other elements, and that's how he learned this new move.
And by move, you mean that breaking move, like he's Turbo in Breaking, doing that. You got to feel the flow. I love him.
He's so... Iroh is possibly the best character on the show. He's great.
Oh, he's my favorite. Like, I love everybody, but he is my favorite. Well, I don't love Azula, but whatever.
Meanwhile, Sokka is still stuck in the ground.
Yeah. Tough look.
Yeah, it's not great. His little friend, who he previously was hunting, tries to bring him food. But that doesn't work out too well either.
Nah, I don't know I think he's kind of trolling him. He's like, oh, you want to be a vegetarian? Here's an apple. I'm only going to roll it so you can look at it. Like, it's like right there and he can't quite get it. It's pretty funny.
So meanwhile, Katara has taken Aang to practice his waterbending, you know, because he needs a break from the earthbending. And
or as Toph says, go splash around in the water till you feel better.
And while they're practicing, Katara helps Aang to realize that he has to face his hesitation of earthbending face on. He can't keep avoiding it. And this is kind of a thing with Aang. Like, every time something's a little bit too difficult for him, he kind of, like, tries to avoid it.
And she says something that's really profound, right, to help him through it, which I thought was cool. She goes into, hey, if fire is the opposite of the element water, then what is the opposite of air? Earth. That's why you're having such a hard time, because this is contrary to like everything about who you are. Earth and air, like opposite polarities, and you have to face it. Like, so it's, I thought that was really dope.
Yeah. I mean, she's essentially explaining to him the interaction between the elements as well. The same way that Iroh is talking about how they can come together, she's talking about how hard that is. So Toph beats Aang by using his staff as a nutcracker.
The other delicate instrument that's around here. You're not the only... That was funny. It's a delicate instrument. Don't hurt it. It's not the only delicate instrument around here. Oh, God.
Finally, Katara notices that she hasn't seen her brother all day and becomes worried. And I'm like, okay. Y'all always getting attacked and in danger. Nobody's checked on Sokka this whole time.
Yo, I don't understand.
This is so foul.
It's foul.
Yeah, this is so foul. So she and Aang go to find him. And when they find him, you know, he's still stuck. And Aang tries to airbend him out, but it obviously doesn't work.
Gives him a couple of cool hairdos, though. Looks like he's coming out of CBGB. Looks like he's got a couple of things going. It's cool.
Sokka asks Aang to try to earthbend him out, and Aang sits down and tells Sokka, who is literally still stuck in a hole, what a hard time he's having.
Like, everyone expects me to get it. It's like being stuck between a rock and a hard place. Really, dude? Because I mean, I'm literally stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, Sokka has been trapped all day in the sun, hasn't eaten, and Aang is like, oh, it's time to have a heart-to-heart. No! What do you... He's stuck! talk. Talk after he gets out. So just then, Aang identifies Sokka's cute little cuddly friend as a baby saber-toothed moose lion. And his mother has returned.
Yeah. And not feeling the fact that her baby is being handled by the Avatar at all.
Yeah, she's not into it. She's pretty pissed off. Also, Mom, where have you been? Like,
yeah.
Your son would have, if Sokka was a more confident hunter, your son would have been eaten.
Like, lunch. It's bad.
So the move that Iroh is trying to teach Zuko is letting lightning move through him. You know, so channeling it through his body. He explains that it has to move through the body, through the stomach, which is the, you know, the ocean of chi. And they practice this move in theory, but Iroh refuses to actually send real lightning Zuko's way because he doesn't want to hurt him. So back with Aang and the gang, Aang is trying to reason with a saber-toothed moose lion who's pretty upset. You know, he's holding her baby and she's not into it. It is not at all effective and is just about as she's about to eat Sokka.
Aang, don't leave me again. He goes, don't leave me again.
Aang meets her head on and airbends her away. Toph sees the entire thing, did not move at all to help, and challenges him to stand his ground. You know, obviously he stood his ground against a dangerous animal. Now he can stand his ground and against the, you know, a boulder. Aang is able to move a boulder, and Toph saves Sokka from the hole. Thank you. Somebody finally removed Sokka from the hole.
Yeah, good call by her too, by not letting Aang try to do
it. Oh my god, he probably would have destroyed Sokka. Like, it would have been the end of Sokka. Yeah. So just as Sokka and Katara are reunited and he starts to tell her about, you know, how this experience changed him, Aang demands attention and starts showing off his new earthbending.
So self-absorbed. Like, anything to get Katara's attention, too. Like, it's like, oh, your brother was almost dead and almost eaten by a moose lion. Okay, look at me, I can earthbend! Oh my gosh.
So Zuko is trying to get lightning to strike him in a storm, but it doesn't happen. You know, he wants to practice this new technique he just found. And the episode ends with Zuko crying in the rain.
But it's, like, fascinating, that scene to me, because he's, like, screaming at the heavens. He's screaming at, like, you know, yeah, he wants lightning to hit him. He's, like, saying, you know, you've never held back against me, talking about all the suffering he's felt and letting it out. It's like his rage against, like, it reminded me of one of my favorite scenes in Forrest Gump, Lieutenant Dan's, when Lieutenant Dan's was yelling during the storm. And it was really, and it's really, really powerful. Anyway, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think that this is, this scene leaves a lot of questions for me, too. Like, who is Zuko talking to, right? You know, like, they don't seem to have, they don't seem to worship one deity, or that we haven't really learned anything about deities at all. So it's just like he's kind of just yelling at the universe and the elements that he feels always work against him. Yeah. And he wants them to work for him. Which is interesting, and you really feel his loneliness in that moment, and how isolated he feels, and how much he feels tormented.
100%. Yeah, no, I agree. And it's I love it. I love that scene. I love all the Zuko stuff in this run of episodes is really strong, really, really strong. So now we go into episode 10, the library.
Oof, big one.
Big one. Oh man. Team Avatar is goofing around and considering getting a bit of R&R. You know, they're going on their own personal vacation. Sokka, though, he's like, man, we're running out of time. You guys are talking about vacays. I'm not trying to hit Cabo. I want to get this map. All right, let's go.
You know, it's so funny because I never thought before this, Sokka has like a really good point. Like, I wasn't thinking about like, how are they actually going to get to the Fire Lord? Yeah. I was also like, no. Like, I need to learn these bending techniques. And Sokka's like, right, we're just going to, like, travel west until we get there and be like, hello, Fire Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. No, crazy. Crazy. It's such a good call by Sokka. I was like, yeah, how are they going to do that? Wow, good call. So I'm glad he thinks about this and the fact that they're going to need intelligence to face the Fire Lord. But alas, they decide... Each person gets their own personal vacation. And so Katara decides she wants to go to the Misty Springs Oasis as a destination for her mini vacation. Now, fans of the show will know that some crazy shit goes down at the Misty Springs Oasis if you love this show or the subsequent series that goes after. God, Katara, you could have picked something better. But when they get there, there is no spring. There is no mist. There is dust. Okay.
This place is pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So Sokka gets inside. They go inside the bar there after Katara pulls him inside because he's getting like a couple of dirty looks from the locals, only to find that there's like nice smoothie bars inside this place. Who would have thought? The Misty Springs Oasis has a nice, refreshing, fruity drink that they all should taste. And he's like, let's get one of those. And they bump into a clumsy professor, Zay of Ba Sing Se University. Ba Sing Se has everything, huh?
Mm-hmm.
They got so much. Mm-hmm. So much happens in Ba Sing Se University.
It is a center of culture and education.
Yep. And they I love it. I love it. So who wants to know? This professor wants to know, wow, Aang, how are you even alive? There's an air nomad in my presence. He's a living relic. He starts measuring his head. He wants to look at his eyes. He's asking him questions. He wants to know all about it. So Sokka at that point, realizing that this is a man of knowledge, a learned man, probably not quite the science man that Sokka is, but maybe, you know, one of the liberal arts. And Sokka asks the professor for a more updated map, and they open the map that the professor has, which also does not include the Fire Nation. But the professor says that he's going to be going into the desert regularly and has been going into the desert to seek Wan Shi Tong's library. And Wan Shi Tong is a spirit that collected books from all over the world to preserve humanity. So they decide at that point on Appa that they're going to venture into the desert looking for the library, to which Toph, as they're on Appa, fakes them out. Straight fake moves. Like, oh, there it is. Guys, she's blind. She does not see it. All right? She's flying through the sky and she sees through her feet. What is wrong with you people?
I kind of fell for it too, though. Like, I'm not going to lie. When Toph screams out, oh, there it is. I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, wait. No, she can't. She literally can't see.
And we get the classic Toph gif of her, like, putting her hand in front of her eyes, like, yeah, come on, guys. It's pretty hilarious. I love it. They come across a structure that's buried in the sand, and they see a fox go inside. But they thought it doesn't look like the library that's inside the map or the picture that they have. But they realize that the library is that structure, but that is completely buried underneath the ground. Toph senses the inside of the library and tells them that the inside's completely intact and it's a very large structure. So they say Appa and Toph can hang outside, and Toph really is not that into going into the library. She brings to Katara's attention that she can't really see the books and read them, so she doesn't want to go. So they hang out, and it's adorable to see Toph and Appa, like, hang for the first time.
Yeah, like, they bond one-on-one a little bit. Like, and it's a great scene, too, because she's explaining to Appa that, like, she sees by feeling, but she can't really feel very well here. It feels, you know, like fluffy.
fluffy. And not that fluffy's bad, she says. It's really cool. It's like, cool. Like, she realizes at that point that Appa may take offense. And she doesn't want to offend Appa. She likes Appa.
Yeah.
So it's cool.
It's a nice scene.
It is. I love it. I love it. So upon entering the library, they see the spirit Wan Shi Tong immediately, who takes the form of a large owl. And Wan Shi Tong tells them that humans are no longer permitted to come into the library because humans only come in to gain knowledge to use against other humans. You may recall that at the end of season one, fucking General Zhao is the reason why we cannot go into the library as humans anymore. Because he went there in search of a way to kill the moon?
I'm gonna go and snuff the moon out. When they die, then I'm gonna have all the power. This day will live in infamy.
Trash.
Fucking trash.
I hate Zhao. You know what, though? Anyway. I hate him, but compared to Azula, I'll take him.
Yeah, true. Because he's kind of incompetent. Azula's like precise and good.
Yeah.
Like he's, you know, so we would take him back. Plus, it's good to make fun of Zhao. It's fun. Wan Chi Tong agrees to allow them to look around because they're with the Avatar. But they each have to present something to him so they can go in. And Sokka offers a string?
Yeah, it's... Oh, Sokka. We are like Sokka's biggest advocates, but he just... Yes. Sometimes, yeah.
He goes, Wan Chi Tong, you're not very bright. Oh, man. So at that point, he lets him in because he says that they're going to not do it because they give their word not to try to use this to hurt other people. And when they get to work doing their research, Aang comes across a weird lion turtle thing, which will have is pretty big foreshadowing for both this series and the series that follows it, The Legend of Korra. And, you know, we'll leave it there. So keep an eye on that. And then Sokka removes a scroll from a protective cover about the Fire Nation's darkest day.
Okay. This is so wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... Sokka. This was so wrong. Like, it is one thing for Sokka to be seeking the knowledge, but to remove a artifact from a protective covering and the way that he treats it, he just kind of, like, rolls it up. Sokka, no. No.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he it's pretty clear Sokka's intentions early on when he's like, says, you're not that bright, and he goes, well, bright enough to fool you. So Sokka is not going in there with the cleanest heart and the cleanest intentions, right? He knows he's going to do something to bring down the Fire Nation, but he feels that his cause is justified because of what the Fire Nation has done to all of them,
yeah,
right?
No, so, I mean, I think that's true, but it's just, these guys really get on this like moral high ground, but then sometimes they just kind of break the rules for the sake of breaking the rules. Anywho, continue.
I agree. No, I totally agree. I totally agree. And you know, it leads them, when they get that, they follow the to a place where they see the Fire Nation had destroyed a lot of the evidence that they didn't want people to know about. But then the fox takes them into a room that's a true marvel. A mechanical wonder, a planetarium, or it could just be a building on the Upper West Side. I don't know. It's like, you know, all the New Yorkers, we see planetarium quite a bit. But no, it is beautiful. And that being said, they enter a date from the scroll into the sundial, and it shows them when the solar eclipse, shows them a solar eclipse. Sokka creates a plan to fight the Fire Nation during the next eclipse. But then Wan Chi Tong comes in and he is pissed. He's not happy.
Yeah. I mean, this is big news, right? So they figure out that the Fire Nation is unable to bend during the eclipse. This is like Sojin's comet type news. This is big.
Very big. Very big for their mission. But the spirit world is unconcerned with that, their mission. That knowledge is there for knowledge's sake. It's not there to be leveraged in the way that humans see fit. So Wan Chi Tong decides that he has to sink the library.
Yeah.
And that they will never, ever leave there because they know too much already. Outside, Toph sees that the library is sinking. And so she does her best to use her bending to prevent the library from sinking. But she is in the midst of a struggle. They need to leave, but Sokka insists on finding out when the next eclipse is going to be because he realizes, I know what's going to happen and what will happen, but I have no idea when the eclipse is going to happen. And he and Aang go back into the planetarium to get the date. When he aptly says, I don't need to search every single date. I just need to search between now and Sozin's Comet. Because after Sozin's Comet, well, let's not think about that so much, all right? Let's just get that information. And they find out it's just a few months away. So then they're out trying to escape
And they get out of, they start moving towards getting out of there. And outside of the library, things are not going well. While Toph is trying to keep them from being sunk underneath the ground, Appa's being attacked by the masked men that we saw earlier, right? They were riding on their sand scooters. I don't know what those things are called. They look like sand scooters. Can we call them sand scooters?
Sure.
Let's call them sand scooters.
I mean, they're sand benders. So, like, I think it's like some kind of like ship that they can use on the sand. I also just want to note they're sand benders, which is pretty cool because we know that Toph can't really see, but clearly there's a kind of earth bending that allows you to bend sand.
Yeah, it's really cool. And we're starting to see little distinctions in different types of bending through the four elements. It's really cool.
Yeah.
I like that. So these masked men are coming to get Appa. Leave Appa alone, damn it. And Toph tries to help him, but she can't help him and hold the building up. So she makes the choice to keep Team Avatar from being sunk under the ground. And Appa is captured. And she, under her breath, as she's holding the building, apologizes to Appa, knowing that she could made a choice in that moment to save Team Avatar over saving Appa. Even though Appa's part of Team Avatar, she knew that the people underneath the ground would be lost for good.
Yeah.
Tough choice. Just as Wan Shitong is about to capture Katara, Sokka and Aang save her, and Professor says that he's going to stay behind, and he doesn't want to leave. He could stay there for eternity, and so he will. And they narrowly escape, but they don't celebrate because as they get outside, they realize that Appa is gone.
Oh, this is the beginning of a very tough arc. Like, yeah. This arc is really difficult. Poor Appa. I just can't.
I was distraught when Appa was taken off, and yeah, we'll have many, many, many episodes to explore this. But very distraught. We love you, Appa. Stay strong, buddy. All right. What did we learn in this episode?
Well, we learned a couple of things. But the things that really jump out are... So we learned more about Zuko's origin story and his childhood. Much of the trauma that Zuko has endured has been linked to his father's cruelty up to this point. But we also learned that his grandfather was also a ruthless Fire Lord, and he was going to punish his father by killing Zuko and taking his life instead. This didn't come to pass, and Zuko's mother left shortly after, suspiciously around the same time that his grandfather dies. So this story goes a long way to explaining Zuko's suffering and why he just can't let go of the shame and feels like he needs to restore his honor. I feel like I definitely learned a lot more about Zuko in these episodes. Like you really start to see a picture shape of a kid who really struggled even before his mother left. And then his mother walks out of his life forever and his father becomes the Fire Lord. And he's stuck with the two cruelest people in his family, Azula and Ozai.
And it opens up why Iroh would take such a vested interest in him, right? Like to have his, because Iroh's throne was essentially stolen from him, and his, you know, son is gone, and he can see Zuko's heart, and as Zuko is kind of the outcast out of those three that are left. And I think that Iroh, you know, not only from the standpoint, up to this point, I thought, oh, well, Iroh loves him because it's almost like filling a void for him as well, because he doesn't have his son anymore. But I think that's true. But I also think that he is very invested in Zuko from the standpoint that he sees the goodness that is possible in Zuko. And it opens a door to some of the family dynamics of the Fire Nation this season in a way that we didn't see in season one. And we haven't even gotten to the third book yet, right? Where it's really called Fire, right? And it's about a lot of the things of the Fire Nation. We're still in the book that deals with the Earth Nation. and that element. And I think it's really interesting to see that they're opening a little window into like the family dynamics of the Fire Nation, and making them a little more human.
Mm-hmm.
And we also learned about the solar eclipse. We learned about the day when the Fire Nation could be weakened, and the day when they were weakened in the past, is that their powers are derived from the sun. So the loss of sunlight means that they cannot bend. And that is almost like you said earlier, the knowledge of Sozin's Comet. This is a real big game changer and something that we want to keep an eye on for the rest of the series.
Yeah, this is a big deal. It's also, you know, I think this was really interesting that they kind of foreshadowed in last season the power the sun has over their firebending abilities. So to have the sun be obscured for this amount of time is really devastating to the Fire Nation. And also the Fire Nation is aware of this. And so that's why they try to destroy all the records of it.
Yep. 100%. Man. So what are the themes that you saw that popped out in this? We got some themes we want to go over.
Yeah. So one of them is sense of self. So last week we talked a lot about identity and how Toph and Zuko both use their alter egos to be someone else. This week, we saw how sense of self and the narrative that we shape about our lives can hold us back from achieving our goals. First, let's look at Zuko's story. He's still holding on to the past trauma of losing his mother and being brutalized by his father. But we see that even as a child, Zuko struggled to be accepted by those who were in authority. Rather than forging his own identity, he often followed Azula's lead. So for too long, Zuko's primary concern has been becoming more like his father and Azula. Like many of us, he seeks approval in those who reject him. But Zuko is loved. He's loved by two people who are more compassionate and caring, Iroh and his mother. And in these episodes, he starts to consider what it would be like if he listened to them rather than rejecting them. He trusts his mother's words that remind him not to forget who he is, and he reconciles with Iroh. When Iroh tries to teach him how to bend lightning, he tells Zuko that he must confront the turmoil inside of himself. And Zuko cannot advance until he finds a way to make peace with who he is.
And I love that that message, as you're saying, of never give up without a fight, that's on that blade, right? That Iroh gives to him, that really resonates with like what we see out of Zuko. So it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, I think this is an important point for him because he seeks the approval of the two people that he will never approve, never receive their approval from. Like, they're just never going to value him. But it's nice to see that even though he lost his mother, that she did value him and that Iroh values him too. And he just needs to lean into their love and their compassion and their care for him rather than focusing on his father's rejection and, you know, Azula just being Azula. So it really impacts who he is. And that's what's kind of keeping him from being able to advance because he has that shame.
Definitely. Definitely.
So we also see the sense of self come over Aang as well, right? So it holds him back from learning earthbending. Aang has always struggled with self-doubt. Always. Like,
yeah.
From the very beginning when we meet Aang, he feels very overwhelmed by the responsibility that he has to learn all of these elements and that he is the Avatar.
Well, it's also the thing that led him to go into the iceberg, right? He was doubtful of like his ability to do this, and he tried to flee and then ended up in an iceberg with Appa. So
yeah, exactly. It's a pretty consistent thing about Aang that he just doesn't always believe in himself. And, you know, he's been able to rise to the occasion time and time again, but he doesn't always believe that he can. While Toph's approach to teaching is much harsher than Katara's, Aang must learn to stand strong in a way that he hasn't before. He has to be immovable and firm rather than fluid and flexible. This is totally different from his history as an air nomad. They are, you know, flexible, unattached, free. Aang's lack of confidence that he can achieve this holds him back, and both in his thinking and his ability to actually do the earthbending. So he's not able to advance because he doesn't see in himself that he can do it. He has a hard time visualizing himself as standing strong in this way. He can achieve his goal until he believes that he can. But when he has to face danger head on to save the life of someone else, he gets beyond his self-doubt and fear and utilizes the power that he always has.
Yeah, man, isn't that always, that? And that's a really powerful thing, right? Because there's a lot of us that do that. Like, we can do it for other people. It's hard to do it for ourselves, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and then that leads us to that other theme, right? That concept of interdependence over independence. And we see, right, that theme show up because both Zuko and Toph set out on their own at different times throughout this run of episodes. Zuko because he doesn't think Iroh understands his need to restore his honor, and Toph because she doesn't understand why Katara wants her to contribute to their camp. As we see in Zuko alone and in the chase, neither of these characters can really thrive on their own. They may be able to survive, but it's difficult for them to reach their goals without the rest of their team. In coming back together with their teams, they have to give up some of their independence and acknowledge that they need other people. A difficult task, definitely, for these two very headstrong characters.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. But they are not relinquishing their strength, but rather adding their strengths to the rest of the team. We see this interdependence benefit all of the teams, Avatar and Team Zuko, when they face Azula together. She knows that she cannot triumph against them when they fight as one. Iroh takes this one step further when he explains to Zuko how the elements work in relationship to each other. Zuko is like, this feels like Avatar stuff. But he lets them know that each element has attributes that brings balance to the world. While the nations can operate separately and independently, they work better when they work together.
Yeah, and we see this, you know, all throughout the series, that there are the water tribes are trying to help the Earth Kingdom. You know, Aang is the last airbender, but he is trying to help everybody. The kingdoms work better together when they come together.
100%. Yep. And it's we've been seeing it, and it's like, you know, it's a real theme to keep an eye on, right? Because we've talked about it earlier, how much they're going to have to. How are they going to go about dealing with this threat of the Fire Nation? Because eventually you have to bring the Fire Nation back into the fold, you know?
Definitely. And I think that this builds off of the theme from last week of connection, right? Mm-hmm. So they were trying to explain in the swamp that everything is connected. That connectedness also is interdependence. So I think it was really well demonstrated in this run of episodes how important it is to come together.
Agreed. And that's where we'll leave it for this week, because, you know, it is important for us to come together, and we're grateful that you guys keep coming together and meeting here to talk about and listen to this podcast about Avatar The Last Airbender. We have been having a blast. We've been interacting and having fun with you guys on Facebook threads, and please reach out to us on our social media and also in our email. Go to kinfolklore@gmail.com. Send us any feedback. Follow us at kinfolklorepod on Twitter and on Instagram, and kinfolklorepod also on Facebook. So we'd love to hear from you and keep the conversations going.
Yeah. So we will see you soon. Thank you, everyone.
All right. Have a good week.